Hey, 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 everyone. Welcome back to Spilling the G&T podcast. You're here with Bolo.
And Dr. Tom.
Now, we're here to give you the opinion you never really asked for.
But we're giving it anyway.
That's right.
Now, Bolo here's a performer.
And Dr. Tom's a psychiatrist. And we're here to give you our professional review on
RuPaul's Drag Race Season 16.
So let's raise a glass.
Or a bottle.
And start spilling.
The G&T.
Click. Everyone, welcome back to the live review podcast. You know how it goes. We watch it, we talk, we conversate.
We conversate, we kiki.
And we just show some love, really.
We do our best, don't we?
We appreciate the talents of these queens. We give them their dues. You know, we tip them with our ones, with our voice.
Even if we secretly hate them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll never know. We're like Q. We can just conceal our feelings.
We're here to really... You know, in the words of Megami, protect queer art.
Oh, we are.
Yeah.
And she continues to protect queer art.
And in the words of Plain Jane, what is she giving us worth protecting? Girl, Plain Jane is the gift and gift that keeps on giving. I could watch her own show. She's just the realness.
She's real. Inarguably the main character of the season.
Oh, she is the main character. The thing is, everyone's always like, the beauty about Plain Jane is that she's just a drag queen. She really... I don't think we've said it before. She's just a drag queen.
She's catty. She's judgmental. She's shady. She's everything we love about drag queens.
That's it.
You know, like we talk about... We'll get into the power rankings maybe in a second.
Oh, yes.
Do a little recap. But, I mean, you know, Jane's a front runner here. She's got one of the best track records. I wonder if she's one of those queens who they really want from an All-Stars. You know?
Yes.
Because she makes fantastic TV. I also think Jane would be fully up for that. She'd be like, more exposure, Mama. She's like Magnolia Crawford.
You're right.
I'm just here for the exposure.
Because, you know, the queens have said it time and time again, the real race is after the show. And that is true, because it's almost... You're only as relevant as when you're on. Let's be honest, because they just run season after season after season. So
such a challenge for the queens now to really, really make their mark, set their career in motion. It's really, really tough for them.
You have to be memorable after the show.
Mm-hmm.
You really do, because right now you're the bee's knees.
Uh-huh.
Right now you are everything. Everything is everything, and everything is epic. They are, but as soon as the season's over, it's almost like everyone just goes, okay, cool, done. You know when you're doing it, when
it's like, All Stars is out in a few months, a few weeks.
Yeah, you know, it's like when you do an exam and you study so hard, and as soon as the exam's over, the next day you're like, what? Everything is just forgotten.
Yeah,
you don't remember a single thing. That's what Drag Race is. So the real race does happen after the show. So sometimes it's like, well, an All Stars is kind of, you know, another opportunity to be on, to be, again, you know, very relevant.
If it feels like the time is right, not everybody benefits from an All Stars. Some queens have, and I guess, you know, the queen on the tip of my tongue here is Latrice Royale. Her reputation kind of took a knock because of the edit that she got on her All-Stars season.
Absolutely.
Well, her second All-Stars season, I should say. She was on 1 and 4.
Absolutely.
So it's
right,
not always because, for the best.
Yeah. She has talked about it as well.
Mm.
She is another queen that has said there was an actual bad edit of her. They did manufacture a lot of their drama specifically with Mohart.
Uh-huh.
And she said that she knew exactly which producer it was, and she held them up accountable. The beauty about Latrice is that Latrice has said a few things. She said it's a whole new fan base from when she was in season 4, All-Stars 1.
Mm-hmm.
The fans these days are just so much more vile.
You
know what I mean? Everyone's got so much opinions. And also the mode, the channel that they're allowed to express themselves is much more vile now.
Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion, and everyone can see it everywhere. But the beauty about Latrice is she said, I've had a career before Drag Race, and I will have a career after Drag Race.
She's a businesswoman as well. She has her own agency and everything. Yeah.
Maybe to the fans, the new fans, they think that they cancelled her. They think that they have, you know, like, okay, you're no longer, you know, the heart emoji of the season. she don't care. Like, absolutely. She has said it time and time again. I am Latrice motherfucking Royale.
Yes.
She has said it. And I believe her. She's the one.
She, you know, when we look at it, it's like she went from probably the fan favorite of all fan favorites to, yeah, when you've got 24 hours worth of footage, she said everything she said. She had all the interactions that she had. But if you don't balance it with the good bits, you can make anybody look a bit entitled or demanding. Mm. You know, when you've got 24 hours worth of footage and you capture every single time Latrice said kind of like, I deserve this or whatever, and don't balance it out with what I'm sure were lovely maternal moments she had with the girls, which we saw lots of on season 4.
Mm.
So yeah, it was an unbalanced edit, but I love the fact that Latrice is just like, I'm Latrice. I really don't, it doesn't mean anything to me. But some queens, I guess I'm thinking, the artist formerly known as Fifi O'Hara, Jeremy Carey, took a further knock really from her All-Stars run.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. The biggest gaslight in Drag Race history was releasing Blame It on the Edit. I think that is pure gaslighting at its finest.
Arch manipulator RuPaul Charles.
That is a way of dismissing all of the bullshit that goes into really manipulating all that footage to create their narrative. I really do think that is bitchy. And then getting season 15
That's it. I was just about to say.
Then getting those girls to sing it and make it more popular.
I think we said it at the time, to be honest, because Rue was like, yes, yeah, so you're contractually obliged to do this song. You know that, don't you? So she was therefore like roping these poor girls into doing her dirty work.
Girl.
Arch manipulator RuPaul Charles.
Here we are. Season 16. Tom, who's winning? Give me that. Wrap it up in your power ranking.
Okay.
But also, tell me, outside of the data, what does your heart say, Tom?
My heart says...
What is your clavicle? How does your clavicle feel about this? Okay, I want you to at least speak that's from your clavicle.
A bit more anatomically proximal to the body part that Morphine was talking about. But anyway,
wipe those tears away from your bicep, okay? you hear me?
Well, it's because I'm a shoulder to cry on, so sometimes there are tears on my bicep. Mathematically, it's Saphira. And in my heart, it's Saphira. But if we just talk queen by queen, Saphira has objectively the best track record. I'm not clever enough to do PPE scores. We talk about tops and bottoms, basically. But Saphira has 4 wins now, and she's on a streak of 3 wins, which is a bit of a exclusive club in and of itself. She's not been in the bottom 2. Did her immunity count there? No, I don't think she would have been in the bottom 2 on that episode.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
I think following up behind her, we have Plain, because she's got 3 wins now. Plain has not technically had a bottom 2 placement, but do you think if it hadn't been a non-elimination episode, she would have been... I hope she's not listening because she's gone mad about this on Twitter. Do you think she would have been on the bottom 2?
Doo-doo clown mess.
Do you think she would have been in the bottom 2?
You're a troll. Something go back to the depths. I mean, she don't.
On the performance challenge, do you think she would have been in the bottom 2?
Yes.
Yeah.
She would have been. Yeah, that's exactly what would have happened. She would have been in the bottom 2. So you can almost say, you know, she was saved. By that same token, Saphira was given that win for the presentations. It should have gone to Jane or Q. And that's just the realness. That's just I'm just trying to keep it real. I'm trying to keep it 100, okay? Trying to keep it real.
I would have said it was between Plain and Nymphia rather than Plain and Q. But again, I hope Q's not listening. then we do have Nymphia. 2 wins. No bottom 2 placements. She was in the bottom 3 for Snatch Game. You could argue she was spared a little there, right? Mm-hmm. And also her Plain gifted, you know, Saint Plain Jane, the magnanimous, she gifted her immunity potion unto her sister, for the performance challenge. Do you think Nymphia needed it?
No.
It would have been Q and Plain, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Plain should have drunk it herself. Girl. Girl.
Were you just not thirsty, girl? And then we have Q, who also has a great track record, two wins, both design challenges, but she has been in the bottom two.
And debatably, she was saved. Amanda was sacrificed.
Like the lamb she is.
Yeah.
Amanda, the sweet little lamb.
She was sacrificed, yes. So that Q could live on. And then we got Morphine. Now, Morphine is our trooper.
She is a trooper.
She is our trooper.
She has so much star quality.
Yeah.
Three bottom two placements. She sent home her friend, Junami.
Oh.
Remember? Yeah. We kind of forgot about that the other week, but she did send home Junami. Yeah.
Yes.
She sent home the lip sync assassin, Myra Manlepage.
Yes, sure. She did. All RuPaul. It's up to you. It's up to you.
And she sent home little... Well, she murdered poor baby Dawn last week.
You know... That was Dawn. Who did Dawn piss off? Dawn, no, that Dawn must have pissed someone off in production, or she, I don't know. She must have, because that was unfair. Like, just, you know, just thinking about the lip sync, and it was she had no chance. Like,
she's been very sweet and magnanimous about that on social media as well. She said something to the effect of like, "Yes, that song Body was right at Morphine Street, but Morphine probably would have sent me home with most songs."
Oh, okay.
Bless her.
Well, there it is. Okay. Out of Q, like, for me, either Q or Morphine is taking that top four spot, because Saphira's, she's got her ticket. Plain Jane, she's got her ticket.
Uh-huh.
Nymphia, she's got her ticket. It's Q or Morphine.
I've got a gut instinct it could be a top three this year.
Really? Why?
I just feel it in my waters.
Okay.
I, you know, all honesty, I've not, we don't look at spoiler threads or anything like that. I just got a feeling.
Yeah.
It's just something about how it makes sense as a top three rather than a top four.
Work.
Wonderful as Morphine and Q are.
Now, the beauty of this episode that we've just seen, we've seen the first part.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty is that it is a makeover. But there's a twist. Not only is it a makeover, there's a performance element in it.
Right.
Which takes the form of, was it, they have to come up with a dance?
A choreographed dance routine.
Which is cool, because usually they have to do this choreography with people who aren't dancers. With people who don't have the experience.
We've not really
never
spoken
walked
about
in heels.
Who they are actually making over.
Yeah. They're making up dancers.
Yeah.
From the Las
Vegas show.
The Vegas show.
Uh-huh.
Now, you said something really interesting. You said that, oh, these guys are quite big, like, for dancers.
Yes. Because I think of dancers, and you'll correct me here because you're the dancer of the world. But I
own dance.
When I think of a dancer's physique, I think of, like, slim athletic, like, yeah, more of a ballet dancer's.
Lean.
Yeah. These guys are lean and they're in incredible shape, but they're more muscular than I would expect. But then I think, who's the audience here?
There it is. When I was dancing, I remember that we had to, the look was lean. And I remember some of the guys started going to the gym, and I remember one of the managers saying that, you don't want to, no, you stop, you're getting too big. Because then the movements look different when you're bulkier. The length doesn't look more apparent, you know? If you think of someone's arm, if it's got like muscles in there, it shortens it and it changes the shape of that line. Which, thinking of someone long and lean, that's just how it is. For a dancer, I've always thought, when I was there, that it is, you have to be lean and not muscular. But
I find that so difficult, you know, because eating disorders really overrepresented in dancers.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, no wonder when there's that kind of talk in that environment.
And
like,
yeah,
you have to be a certain way.
Well, especially if you're doing like the classics, like ballet. If you're doing ballet, you are a walking anorexic. Like, that's just your mentality. You're always, I remember the teachers are always telling you, you're not thin enough.
I just think that's so, so toxic and destructive.
Now,
and yeah.
So these guys are quite muscly. And then you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's because they are dancing for the gays. The gays. And it's like, it's a gay thing, isn't it? To be muscly, to have that aesthetic.
Well,
like,
that's
when you
a
go
whole
into,
conversation in and of itself.
When you go to like a gay bar and they have a go-go dancers, a lot of the times, and if you're a go-go dancer, girl, you work. No, props to you.
Mm-hmm.
But they aren't the best dancers. They are not. You know what they do? But they are the most conventionally good-looking guys with great bodies. They do the same move over and over. They just move their hips, go up and down. It's like, there's no, you don't see a 5, 6, 7, 8. You don't see them doing death drop.
Just a cha-cha-cha.
Yeah, you don't see them doing anything. They're just like, they're touching themselves, feeling themselves, grooving. Like, they aren't the best dancers. And it's because, you know, what appeals more to a gay guy mm-hmm. when they're looking at a guy is the look. Talent is not important when you're gay. You just have to be hot. Okay? We are the most shallow beings. How we survive.
No, I know. How have we survived evolution, frankly? It's from a purely Darwinian point of view. The thing is, I mean, that's a whole, we could do a whole podcast in and of itself on beauty standards in the gay community and the aspiration towards a certain muscular, masculine, quote unquote, look.
Or,
why is that? Where does that come from?
Or on the other side of it as well, the very, you know, skinny, smooth,
the twink look.
Those are the those are the two looks that are,
and obviously
idealized in the community.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, when in truth, everybody has different tastes, and there's somebody for everybody, and there's somebody who's attracted to every different type of person, and that's wonderful. But it's the emphasis in gay media on, you're right, it's kind of dichotomous, really. You're either kind of like a muscular uber chad or a slender youthful twink type, and nothing in between. Sometimes bear types are celebrated, I think. But then,
not as much as those. So.
And then there's so many people who just don't, you know, comfortably fit into any of those categories or feel compelled to strive to fit one of those categories when it's just not them. And they're not able to celebrate their own unique beauty. And it's like, why do we do this to ourselves?
You said something really good, really funny / shady when the cameras weren't rolling, sister. Because they're choosing the guys, they have to select the guys by randomly picking up colored balls, and that ball associates with one of the dancers. And you know, what did you say? Say it, Tom. I don't want to call you out
direct to camera, because she was talking about, oh my god, he's just my type. Oh my god, and like it was the most unlikely thing ever that she'd be attracted to this very conventionally handsome, muscular man. Like, oh my god, your type is,
you're actually my type,
handsome and muscular. Like, wow,
what?
What, Q? You quirky girl? Is that why you're called Q? Because you're quirky.
I didn't see that coming. And then also, you got the names of the guys. Yeah,
we've got
the
names. So should we talk about who they're matched with?
Yes. And also, Dawn has returned this episode, having done a cycle of steroids. And, you know, she has absolutely taken a leaf out of season 7's bearded challenge. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And she has put on, she's kind of like pasted on some hair on from a stash.
She's popped to the gym and come back with a little beard, and here she is.
I seriously thought that was Dawn. I'm like, that's Dawn, Dawn's brother, Dawn on steroids.
And she's now called Nick. Anyway, the
spell Nick.
N-I-Q.
So
Q goes first, gets Sebastian, you know, and who would be attracted to Sebastian? Morphine gets Miguel, Nymphia gets Jonathan, Plain gets Nick, and Saphira gets Mark. Now, my main thing that I like about this challenge is that they're a relatively homogenous group. I don't think anybody has a huge advantage over any of the others based on their model. There are subtle differences in them, but they're all muscular guys who are quite tall.
And great dancers.
Well,
you know, I assume, I haven't seen the move yet, but if they're working professionally as a dancer, I'm going to say they're good dancers.
They also all have beards, and I would love it if one of the girls did a bit of a bearded queen look. That would be fun. Just, you know, why shave? But I think there are subtle differences in them that mean some will be slightly more challenging than others just in terms of their bone structure when it comes to the makeup. But going into this challenge, who do you think is going to excel? Who do you think is going to struggle, and why?
I think we can break that down into, you know, who's good with fashion.
Yes.
The category is fashion, the category is makeup, and the category is performance. I think those are the three things that we need to break down. to decide who we think is going to do well. What do you think?
I use the same scoring system every time. And it's based on hair and makeup, outfit / fashion, bond and chemistry and storyline, because that can be really important. Family resemblance, so kind of sticking on brand as well, is in there. The transformation, because that can count for a lot. And also whatever the extra bit is, and in this case it'll be the performance, the dance.
So that's quite the list you got there.
Yeah, well, it's out of 30. You get 5 points for each.
Wow, well, look at
that. Yeah.
In terms of makeup, the hierarchy for me with makeup is Morphine, number one.
Morphine is several points above everybody. Yeah.
For me, number two is Nymphia.
Nymphia's got a fabulous mug. Yep.
Number three is Sephira and Q.
Yeah, both of them are actually interesting. They're quite sort of graphic. They're quite stamped.
Then Plain Jane is fifth alternative.
You shady bitch.
What?
Now, I think Plain's mug is quite interesting. The other girls, there is a running joke. They do make fun of Plain's mug. There's a bit of a running joke that everything comes together, and it's quite the transformation, because Plain's bone structure is quite masculine. She's got a strong jaw. She's got a brow. But she looks like a glamazon when she transforms. So her makeup skills are good on her own mug. But it is interesting. She doesn't display the same kind of like technicality and carving out and stuff as some of the other girls do. So I do see where you're coming from.
Now, for fashion, Q is number one, with Nymphia like a millimeter behind her.
I think they're neck and neck.
Really?
I actually think Nymphia is more diverse in her fashion. I think I now know what Q's silhouette is.
You've convinced me.
Nymphia.
Okay, Q and Nymphia number one.
Uh-huh.
Number three would be Sephira.
Yep.
And then fourth, I put Plain Jane and Morphine together.
I think that's fair. And even when it comes to abilities as a seamstress, I think that's a reasonable ranking as well. And also the quality of what they've brought on the runway, definitely. So
everything, this is what we think before. We haven't yet seen the rest of the episode. We've only seen up until they've announced what the challenge is. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're kind of like, this is our theory. We think, you know.
Theory.
Dance hierarchy for me, Morphine, number one. Absolutely. Yeah. She's right up there. Number two, Nymphia.
Uh-huh.
Number three, Sephira.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, Plain Jane.
Yeah.
Number five, Q.
Agreed. And
that's a low five.
Is there several? Is it actually like Plain for Q, seven or eight?
Yeah, and at number 13, Q.
Bless her. She's just a bit of a stiff mover, isn't she?
Mm.
She has self-belief, though.
Oh,
which could carry her through.
She, you know what? We all need a bit of Q confidence, don't we? She is queen of delusion. I don't know how she didn't get that award. Now, with a makeover, I mean, we've said it before, sometimes it's a gatekeeping episode.
Can I just talk about one other skill set that I think is actually going to be really important in this one?
Fuck my drag.
Padding and body. Because of the way these guys are, they clearly work out, so they're kind of inverted triangle shapes. And obviously there's room for every body type in drag, but
there's
room for everyone.
Room for everyone, let's just say that.
But Drag Race loves an hourglass, and Rue and Michelle encourage the queens to strive for that shape. They love cinching, they love padding. Now, Plain is an expert at that, and I think she'll translate that really well to her makeover. The others all do it to varying degrees, apart from Morphine, who has her own lovely body that she loves to flaunt. I think she cinches a little, but not always, and she's got her BBL that she loves to show off, but she barely pads, and I don't think I've ever seen her in a breastplate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be interested to see how she applies that to her makeover.
Are you done?
Yeah.
You're done?
Yeah.
You're done.
Because you'll tell me when I'm done.
Now, the makeover, usually it's a gatekeeping episode for like the top four or just gatekeeping in general.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to get rid of someone, the makeover is what they use to get rid of them.
Gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss.
They do what they want. Exactly that. They do what they want with that episode. I mean, sometimes it's like, I don't see the family resemblance. And then right after that, Michelle's like, it's too similar.
Too samey-samey.
It's
too
same-same. It's like, they pick and choose.
Or they'll decide, like, that's not your brand.
Yeah. And when I look about like the shenanigans that go on with a makeover, it goes way back. It goes way back to season one.
100%.
Chanel versus Rebecca Glasscock.
Long-term listeners will know that we rant about this every makeover episode because we're still not over it.
Justice for Chanel.
I mean, Chanel's not over it, so why should we be over it?
Justice for Chanel. If you know, you know. Did I just pull a J-Lo? Orange soda, if you know, you know.
She's the only person who ever had orange drink.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we won't talk about that J-Lo documentary at all. But there are other examples of like shenanigans that go on. I mean, season 14, Olivia and Denali.
That was a really interesting one. It was a bit mid-season. There was 8 girls, and it was they made each other over, I think probably because of lockdown stuff.
Yeah.
So they were in pairs, and they were judged in pairs as well. Because I remember Simone and Utica got the win, and they were fab. They were really, really good. Translated their brand so beautifully onto each other. Objectively, the worst person, the worst-looking person on that stage was poor Rosé.
And like right now, for our listeners, you know exactly the picture that I'm that's in my head right now.
Yes,
Rosé,
yes.
Just sitting there on the chair with that look of despair on her face. It is just
abject horror.
What is happening here on this day?
It was when Tina Burner transformed Rosé into tuna burger.
Yeah.
The beauty shall never be replaced. I mean, Rosé actually did a really good job on Tina. You could argue they balance each other out a little bit. But Olivia and Denali, it just didn't translate very well. But you could argue that they shouldn't really have been in the bottom two. And Denali, who'd been doing really well in the competition, ended up being sent home. So it was a bit murky, that one.
Yeah. I mean, Dakota Schiffer.
Oh, I'm still not over that.
No one should ever be over Dakota Schiffer being in the bottom for that episode at all. And what universe, in what world is Dakota in the bottom for that amazing look and transformation that she did?
I remember thinking, oh, she's easily top three.
Yeah, I think we were like, oh, she's absolutely high.
Great, we like Dakota. She's going through to the next round. Because, like, I remember Cheddar did an exceptional job and it was like, Cheddar's won this. That's great. Danny did a great job. And then Dakota did a great job. Fabulous 60s Balenciaga, Valley of the Dolls. Just very on brand, very beautiful. And then all of a sudden they just start picking the look apart and they're like, bye. Mm. When there were 3 girls who really did struggle, because they were mostly because they were kind of wildly off brand, not because they did a bad job. Like Pixie Polite did the whole fairy thing. And it was like, not seen you do that before, Pixie. Jombas all of a sudden was a mime. And it's like, okay, Jombas.
And then Black Pepper came for Danny Beard's gig.
That was so weird. And like, yeah, you know, they looked varying degrees of good.
Family resemblance where?
Branding where? Whereas Dakota ticked all the boxes.
Mm.
We've just seen UK5 as well. Shenanigans in that makeover.
What, Tamara?
Tamara was spared. Tamara is not dead. such a cool.
May she rest in peace.
Such a cool.
Tamara, Angels of the North.
A light all season. So entertaining, so charismatic. She was spared particularly in design challenges in the makeover. You know, she had the, you know, one could argue the easiest model, very conventionally gorgeous young woman. And she put a really funny wig on her and a wispy lash and called it a day. I remember the outfit looking quite ill-fitting as well because she was so petite and she hadn't altered it. And then, like, whether you like the taste level or not, Dee Delicious had done a really good technical makeover on quite a masculine-looking guy and was chucked in the bottom with poor Kate Butch, who definitely deserved to be there. Much as we adore her, that makeover was a little ropey. And it's like, oh, okay.
But this is just the shenanigans of makeovers, isn't it? I mean, do you remember when Jocelyn Fox had that drama couple?
Oh, my goodness. You know that episode's not available on a lot of platforms anymore because he threatened to sue or something.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Really?
You know the whole story, don't you? Everybody knows the story.
Well, yeah. For those who don't know the story, Jocelyn Fox had to make over... They were doing Bride and Groom. So they had to make over the the groom and drag, but the bride, the lady brought her fiance over as punishment because he was cheating.
Yeah.
And the punishment was you're going to come on drag race and they're going to make you over.
Because he was a sportsman of some kind. Mm. So I guess, you know, it's icky to think that going on drag race should be used as a punishment for anybody.
Well, this was season six. So
times were different.
Yeah, this was way before.
But I think it's because he was a sportsman and his teammates would make fun of him was the idea. But his heart was not in it. Also, they took away all the dark skin makeup when Trinity left. So
they or did she?
Trinity was like, "I'm taking this."
Yeah, the girl, the bride.
Oh, just as a final.
I wonder if she went in and she grabbed every single complexion for dark skin, and she took away. She goes, "No. This is punishment. You ain't not gonna look glam on Drag Race."
Do you know? I can't forget as well. Bianca's comment, like, "Do you remember that one girl, Gremlin?" Like, okay, weirdly accurate.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to see what these girls do with them. Let's talk about some vibes that we're seeing inside the workroom. First of all, I don't know if we said a lovely thank you to Richard from Mississippi for a lovely email that we got.
We did.
We did.
But you can say it again because it was really lovely.
Well, yeah. I just needed a pick-me-up because someone. It's nice to hear that I'm amazing, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
It's so good to hear
Richard
that.
Appreciates me and he says that I'm beautiful.
I appreciate you.
Too.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, thank you, Richard, for that email. Anyone else, if you want to reach out, please do so.
I mean, say hi.
We do get millions and hundreds of...
The post bag is overflowing, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's too much. Okay, I don't need to see that.
No, you know how to send us DMs and stuff or emails or whatever. Always feel free to say hi.
So, okay. The vibes in the workroom, let's have a look. All I'm thinking is that there is no way. I mean, some of these girls are talking about, like, oh, no, walking in heels, I got big feet. There is no way that you have been working on RuPaul's Drag Race, the Las Vegas show, and have not gone in the back room with the girls and just put their heels on and just had a little strut in between numbers. There is no way.
There's going to be a whole cupboard full of beautiful shoes in male sizes. Just pop them on, have a go.
They have absolutely worn heels. Stop this narrative, okay? Stop it. Because you can balance. You got good core. You've got good coordination.
Uh-huh.
You know how to walk in heels. Let's stop that narrative right now. For any of you.
Sebastian in particular seemed like a natural.
Oh, Sebastian. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a walk. It was a strut and it was a moment. Sebastian is eating it. Uh-huh. I love it. Now, Nymphie, when, you know, it's like... Girl, stop acting like you haven't been in a K-pop group. You've got this dance. Stop it.
Well, yeah. Nymphia, obviously, she's the queen of hidden talents. Obviously, less hidden now because we're coming towards the end of the season and she has showcased how multi-talented she is. She does talk about her battle with her harsh inner critic, though. And I think this is one of the first truly vulnerable moments we've seen from Nymphia, you know, in the sense that most episodes, she just kind of does have a moment where she's like, I can't do it. But it feels like it's quite camped up for comedic value. Turns out there's probably a little grain of truth in there. And perhaps to avoid being vulnerable on camera, she does dress it up with humour.
Yeah.
And so, okay. Yeah. But this feels really... Since I thought Jonathan was really lovely with her. He was very, very sweet and they had a lovely moment.
Mm.
You know, bonding.
Yeah. Oh, straight ally. Oh, he's got to be at least be bi.
Oh, don't. Come on. Don't tell him what he is.
I'm hoping. It's more than I'm hoping that you are. If you're listening, Jonathan.
Regardless, he's married.
Yeah, okay.
He's married, so.
Tom, that's irrelevant. That is not. Why are you throwing that data at me?
We're learning a lot about Bala's morals today.
It kind of reminds me of what Dawn said. Now, Dawn said at Roscoe's last week when
Do you
asked
mean
about
Dawn or Nick, like real Dawn or
no
Dancer
Dawn, Dawn,
okay,
Dawn and Boy Drag, Dawn and Dawn. So Dawn was a guest at Roscoe's, mm-hmm. and they asked her about like, oh, is Nymphia just, you know, playing around with mm-hmm. the whole, oh, I'm scared, but this is amazing. And Dawn said, no, it's actually she felt it's quite genuine. She really does go through these moments where she's very much her own biggest critic and mm-hmm. she kind of withdraws because she feels that she can't do it and then she ends up being amazing. But Dawn said, no, it's real. I've been there. Mm-hmm. It is real. She's not playing it up. So it's nice that this week she's really given us a different side of her.
But she it seems like then she actually has quite a lot in common with Q as striving perfectionists. But whereas it seems like Nymphia more visibly, her critic has turned inward, sort of self to self, we see Q turning it outwards a little more and deflecting self to other. So they've got different styles of dealing with it, certainly.
Yeah, one's bitchy and one keeps it to herself. Moving along. Someone needs to check Safira's luggage limit.
She pulls out what can only be described as, something that's been excavated from the earth. It was a giant geode.
I was, girl, what is this? What limit? The limit does not exist.
The limit does not exist with her.
I'm just like, girl, really?
Maybe she's got like a TARDIS.
I mean, she ends up saying that she's not going to wear it because, you know, there's a dance element to it and she's not able to perform in there. I mean, she could, but you're not going to see any movement. You're just going to see, like, you know, this big ass gown on her with, like, a little, but her moving inside it. You're not going to see anything, are you?
It's, so,
like, is she doing a split or is she sitting down? You can't tell because the gown's covering it all, isn't it?
So she does have to switch things out at the last minute. Now, the magnanimous angel, Plain Jane, gave her a garment to use. Which is very, very kind of her.
It is.
The redemption story arc continues. But it does kind of set up Safira for being a little bit on the back foot.
Yeah. I have been conditioned to be happy when RuPaul laughs as a fan of the show. Because when she laughs, I get happy. Yes. And I feel like I've done something right. Can you imagine what the pressure is for these queens to get that when they're actually there? I'm being very serious. They are conditioned to do whatever it takes to get RuPaul on their side. And when
Plain
Jane introduced Lazy Susan, I mean, it broke. It broke. RuPaul was broken for a second. That's a factory reset, the bitch. Really, she was broken, laughing.
She was like a Furby whose batteries were running down.
Can you imagine how amazing Plain Jane
Plain looked out. Giddy. She looked like giddy and she didn't know what to do with herself.
And then the other girls, like, if I was in the workroom, I would be like, oh, okay. I would not be. I'd be like, oh, shit.
Okay, there they go again.
Yeah, how am I going to? I've never made her laugh like that.
It must be intoxicating. I remember Bob the Drag Queen saying it felt like making a baby laugh. It's just kind of like intoxicating. You want to do it again.
Mm. Yeah. Well, there it is. So, and with that name, Hyacinth Crystal, I mean, Tom, we both thought of our lovely Hyacinth bouquet.
The bouquet lady of the house. The lady of the house speaking. Oh, it's you, Rose.
Hyacinth. Girl, that's
I would have stuck with Hyacinth, but, you know, as Safira says very wisely, if mother throws you some crumbs, you eat those crumbs. And so she changes her name to Shakira.
Yeah.
Plain has a bit of a bonding moment with Nick as well, talking about kind of being closeted and kind of... I think it's quite interesting, the thought of having like a completing education as a sort of backup, because drag can be such a risky business, I guess, in terms of career stability. So that was an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think it's a conversation, but it's for me when I was dancing, when I was younger, yeah, a lot of us would dance full time, but a lot of us were still at university studying.
Yeah.
It was so... And also because you were in New Zealand, you were in like in America where all the auditions and all the jobs are in LA, Hollywood, all the gigs are there. You're in New Zealand, like people don't even think about, you know, it's so small. We don't have, celebrity culture isn't as big. We don't have all of these gigs we can audition for. We don't have all of these opportunities. So especially when you're out like in the wop-wops of those countries, you had to have... a backup. Had to go. You had to still be studying. You had to be working towards something else because it was still very up in the air, very unsure. Up until Paris Goebel made it a reality.
Yeah.
And she has. And now there are so many. She's put New Zealand on the map. She put herself on the map. She is, in my opinion, the top choreographer working right now. And it is. She just did the Super Bowl. She's done Rihanna's things. She's now done, because she's just been announced doing Coachella for Doja Cat. She did Vogue. She did the Vogue runway in France.
Yeah.
She did that. She is the top working queen.
She's and the name on everyone's lips, isn't she?
Everyone wants some of Paris Goebel. And I was trained by her, so
yeah, you were there. You were there at the beginning.
I was there before she got all these gigs. Okay, I was there before it, and I remember. I watched Paris, but I was already in another dance club / crew, and I remember her on the rise coming up, and she was like this little name, like Paris Goebel, or this all girl. She's all about this all girl dance group. And then it was just like, oh, wow. She was doing things that was just like, oh, how did she do that? How is she getting everyone in sync? Where is this new style coming from? Mm. Anyway, I digress. I think we can go straight to watching what the queens do. And then anything else, we can just kind of mesh it together.
And as we've said before, I've got my little crude, because it's so complex in makeovers, I need some sort of scoring system. Mm-hmm. So as you said before, grade them on hair and makeup, outfit, like bond chemistry, performance type stuff, family resemblance / branding, and the transformation. Yeah. And you're going to comment on dancing. I'm not going to like give them numerical scores, but I need something to help me develop a hierarchy.
Okay. I'm just going to go with my heart, Tom, because I think that's all the stats I need.
Yeah.
All right. We're starting off with Q, Tom. What do you think? Talk to me.
Well, Q has gone a very interesting, quite artistic route. I think my favorite element here is the makeup. It's very Peter Sato. Very graphic, very 80s, very interesting. And that's really my favorite element. Obviously, in the workroom, it's quite comical seeing it all come together because there was just initially like this whiteout kind of thing going on.
Okay, what about the looks?
The looks. So actually thinking branding wise, it feels very dawn coded, which could be a bit of a mistake. I do like it overall. It's very eclectic. I see different time periods being drawn on because while the makeup is very 80s Peter Sato, the looks themselves feel very like 90s raver. I'm getting kind of like a bit of Jeremy Scott. I'm getting a little bit Nickelodeon. You know that, what's it called? Real Monsters, that okay. Nickelodeon cartoon.
Where the wild things are.
That it's all mixed in there. But I just can't help but think, oh, Zebra, that's like Dawn's signature. But anyway, Dawn doesn't own Zebra.
The way that Tina doesn't own Flames.
I didn't know Tina Burner owned Flames.
Do you know Candy Muse is on House of Villains season 2? I cannot wait. Sorry,
good for her getting the gigs. She's great TV. So overall, and I guess one criticism would be that the outfit that's been put on Miguel is a bit of a schlumpy kind of hoodie thing. It's cute. It's graphic. I like it. Feels like an easy answer.
It's very much what Gigi Good.
She did. She did.
Gigi Good season
12.
12. How she just had two ponchos. Because you know what? It's clever because you know a makeover's coming. You don't know who you're going to get. So this way a poncho is still fashion and it kind of drapes over anyone. If you're small or you're big or large, different body types.
Similar to how like a good four-way stretch catsuit could, you know, fit a wide variety of people as well. However, I don't know what's going on with the padding here. So I can't like critique that. Could be hiding something. Overall, very fun. I do want to say for the record, I think everybody's done a really fab job here, and I'm nitpicking because it's top five, because they look great.
Yeah, the performance, it was very simple. Very, you know what? I didn't have to call for something complicated. It was very 1, 2, 3, 4, and Thriller, and mm-hmm. Thriller, and 1, and 2, and Step, and Step, and Tha, and Da. It was just very, it was very simple. And I think that it was very clever for Q's partner. Yeah. I'll just call her W. It was really...
Do you know, whenever I type Q's name on my phone, it autocorrects the W. So go for W.
Go for the W! I think it was simple, and it was, was it exciting? It was cute. It didn't display any technical, it didn't make the best use of having a dancer as your makeover partner.
Right, right.
It didn't. Right. It didn't. This guy can do turns, splits, flips, and you're getting him to do, to walk on two counts to walk, two counts for the other leg, and then do a Thriller to the side. It wasn't the best use, and it wasn't, you know, the most exciting performance.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I see that as well. I also noticed Q, whereas Sebastian was like serving in the mug, Q was going comedic and pulling like this little whoa faces. which felt like a bit of an energy difference. I don't know.
Okay. Morphine.
And Latina. Obviously, Miguel, but her name is Latina. So I look at these outfits and they're simple but pretty. They're sequin dresses.
Because sequins is what?
Sequin is one. Sequence is more than one. Sequenced. Sorry, yeah. Sequenced. Scarlet and gold, you know, nice complementary high glam colours. The overall look is
fabulous. It's fabulous.
But what I want to say is it really does show off Morphine's workmanship, I think. So the mug that she's painted on Miguel to create Latina, I think is really, really beautiful. And we were thinking earlier, like, these are all handsome guys. They're all conventionally handsome guys. Some of them had faces that I would, you know, makeup artist that I am, that I would perceive to be slightly more challenging to do a drag mug on. And I thought Miguel had one of those faces, just with masculine features and stuff. And she's done a fantastic job, which I would expect from Morphine. The padding is really, really beautiful as well. She's giving us the body fantasy. She's balanced out those shoulders beautifully. Like, sure, she's got a bit of a bodybuilder Barbie thing going on, but the balance is there. The hips are those shoulders should match them hips.
But they don't.
But they do in this case. They do. You know, in the hips and the bum, everything is working for me. I think Morphine has done a really nice, lovely technical job here with the makeover.
Not just that. The performance is probably one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. They came up with the salsa, the steps. Mm-hmm. Choreography was just beautiful. That's how you make use of a dancer. And not only that, this is your way of saying, bitch, I can keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And Morphine kept up. There was a little moment where the reveal from the dancer.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't fully come off.
Yeah.
Not Morphine's fault.
No.
And I can tell you right now that that dancer is kicking himself.
Probably.
Over and over.
He's probably not doing reveals on the stage every night, though, is he? He's not a queen himself.
No, you're right. He's not a queen himself, but taking off clothes, putting it back on.
I struggle with it.
But if you were paid to do that 8 hours a day, two shows a day, 5 days, 6 days a week? No, I don't think that this should be. I would be harder on the dancer, and I would be, if I was a dancer, I would absolutely be giving shit to myself, because that dancers are perfectionists.
Yeah,
you're trained to stand in front of a mirror for years at a time, mm-hmm. correcting mistakes. Okay, you are very critical, and I can say there's nothing I can say because he's already given himself a lot of shit, and I know that.
So, can you please stop kicking him while he's down, please?
But this was amazing. I loved it. I loved it.
Great job, Morphine.
Morphine, I props to you.
Props to you, Mama.
Next up, we got Nymphia and
Juanita.
And Juanita,
who is Jonathan. Probably my favourite outfits on the runway. I think these feathered sort of Big Bird and her little sister showgirl confections are really, really beautiful. I love the ways that the colours sort of complement each other, this sunshine yellow and this lilac. The outfits are really, really gorgeous. One thing I would say with Juanita, obviously being a size or two bigger than the Nymphia, I could see a bit of gaping in the sides. This is a minor, I'm nitpicking, which was white and it was a little distracting. You know, if that was blended into the lilac color, it would have been better, but whatever. The makeup job is beautiful. The hair is sculpted. She's shapely. I think Juanita looks gorgeous and Nymphia's done a great job.
Lovely.
What did you think about chemistry, movement, performance?
Great chemistry. Great energy.
Mm-hmm.
The choreography was lovely. I love that they took a risk and went there. Nymphia was off for a couple of counts. And the reason I say Nymphia is because there's no way the professional dancer was off. I'm sorry. Nymphia, hit me up in the DMs, tell me if I'm wrong. But I don't believe that the dancer was off. There was maybe two or three movements that mm-hmm. were lagging.
It was noticeable.
Yeah. But that aside, the dance was still great.
Yeah.
The chemistry and the energy and the vibe that they had together was brilliant. It was still a good performance.
I loved their vibe as well. And I just loved the ridiculousness of the whole beak thing as well. That really cracked me up. That was just goofy and I loved it. And very Nymphia. This felt very on brand for her. I think family resemblance and branding was strong here.
Now, Safira and Hyacinth.
So one of the bigger challenges, obviously, because of
this. I'm joking, it's Shakira.
Let's call her Hyacinth.
Shakira. I used to always try to sing, me and my sister would always try to do like Shakira when we were younger.
You've got to push it further back in your throat, I think. You've got to yodel. Yeah, so obviously faced a challenge with the last minute change, which we've already mentioned, but they end up looking really beautiful. I do get the storyline with Shakira being the kind of showgirl starlet and Safira kind of being the dance mom. So it kind of does, there's a storyline there with the outfits. I do think Shakira got the nicer outfit.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I love Shakira. Shakira looks amazing for me. Yeah. I love her.
The fringing is beautiful. The padding is great. And with Safira's look, it's nice. It's perfectly nice. I mean, you mentioned this. The blue underneath is distracting because it doesn't fit in with the colour story.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Again, I'm nitpicking because overall they look beautiful.
And Tom, Those shoes.
Oh, well, Slewfoot, isn't she? Bless her. She's Slewfoot.
Those shoes.
I don't think she should have gone with a black shoe here. It is quite jarring with the colour story, to be honest.
She's giving me comfort couture, mama.
Oh, she, you know, this is Mother Safira.
She's giving Slewfoot. I'm giving you an 8 count soon. You just wait and see.
The makeup job is lovely. The hair is big. So tell me a little bit about their dance and their chemistry and things.
Their dance was fun. Again, it was simple.
Mm-hmm.
But I think outside of the technique of dancing, it was more of an energy and a chemistry thing. And the chemistry and energy was lovely.
Yeah.
If anyone was having fun on the stage overall, I think Safira and Sequoia had the most fun. I just felt that energy. It was infectious. Mm-hmm. Was it the most complicated choreography? Was it the best use of a professional dancer? Maybe not. But I still enjoyed the vibe. I still enjoyed that. I was smiling along to the performance. I liked it.
It was joyful and very enjoyable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they were kind of inviting us along. And they fitted in the Aunt Viv was in there.
Yes. Hey, Aunt Viv. Hey. Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. And then we have Plain Jane and Lazy Susan. She does probably win for best name, Lazy Susan. So in terms of makeup job, I think Lazy Susan looks perfectly lovely. I don't see the makeup as being quite the same caliber as other makeup artists on the stage, like Morphine. But Morphine is an exceptional makeup artist. I don't think...
Is it a cop-out? Is Q's makeup a cop-out?
Well, I think actually Sebastian, again, being a very conventionally handsome man, was one of the more challenging faces to drag up. I think he was really smart. I think he was like, right, I might not have the skills in beauty makeup. So what?
He's like, I think he was quite smart. She was like, okay, that's a really ugly face and I can't do anything with it. So what I want to do is I want to put a lot of white makeup on it and just cover it up.
No. Very, very handsome face. Sebastian is gorgeous, but she recognized that she didn't have the skills, I think, as a beauty makeup artist. So she went for something graphic and artistic. 100% that was her thought process.
Work.
So stop putting words in my mouth, okay? Or I'm going to quit.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So, so back to Plain and Lazy Susan. The hair's cute. The looks are very what we'd expect for Plain Jane. Body conscious. And she's showing off a fantastic bodywork and padding job here with Lazy Susan. She looks like an absolute sex kitten. I like I love the comparison to Bumblebee from Transformers. I'm always going to be a sucker for a Transformers reference. I was also getting like Tanya or Scorpion from Mortal Kombat.
Vespi Queen as well.
Vespi Queen. It's a bit Bumblebee, isn't it? Is it the most like complicated haute couture outfit in the world? No, but it's cute and really shows off her workmanship. You tell me about the dancing.
The dancing was... Dawn.
Her name is Nick and also Lazy Susan, but also Dawn.
Lazy Susan was really out dancing and outperforming Plain Jane.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot. She was sitting into all of the moves. She was really, her whole body was going with the direction of, it just looked lush.
Mm.
And she kind of just stole the show for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she's very
really
good at serving sex kitten face.
Oh, she was serving cunt. She was serving. Oh, she's feeling like pussy, feeling like cunt. That's what I. That's what I was getting. She was just like this. She was giving me the angry bitch face, slut whore.
All these lovely words we use to describe women. Yeah. But you said that you thought Nick/Dawn/Lazy Susan was among the most technical of the dancers.
Absolutely
yeah?
was. Mm. She absolutely reminds me of, or just gives me memories, or takes me back to dancers who I know she's been doing that jazz tap. Mm-hmm. Clip ballet since she was like young.
Yeah,
she moves with a purpose. She's just so technical.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, who is the winners and the bottoms this week?
Again, I think that the standard this week was really, really high. I think fab job to all these girls, but decisions have to be made. I'm sorry, we can't have a top five again. So I think Nymphia is one for me.
Okay,
would you disagree with that? Would you have another winner? Morphine's my second
I'm
place.
I'm going to say Morphine. I think Morphine ate makeup, beautiful gowns. But then,
all right, Aretha.
But then the performance was just beautiful, you know, with the little misstep of the outfit.
I don't mind that because and the Latina danced right through it.
Yeah.
She didn't sweat.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with them being a top two, and I think everything else is up for debate, to be honest. All the other queens have done a great job, but there are little bits here and there. So, with Plain, I think the makeup job isn't quite as good as some of the others, and she was a little outshone. Q, I do think the branding is off for Q, and the slouchy, oversized graphic top could be critiqued as a little lazy or unimaginative. And with Safira, I don't know, actually. Maybe Safira is just quite safe.
It's funny because for me, the very two obvious bottoms is Safira and Jane.
Really?
Yeah, for me.
Tell me a bit why you think Q is safe.
Because it's giving concept. It's giving family resemblance. It's giving me good fashion. It's giving me the connected. That's it. The performance, simple. But then when I look at Plain being outshined by her dance partner, Safira, the look and the dance was good, actually. I really enjoyed that vibe. But like
that's
her look with
me.
The blue.
And you can't get past that blue, can you?
I just think in terms of the look, there are two different outfits with her and her sister.
She had to overcome a...
And it's not, I don't know that because they told us. I know it because I see two different outfits with no connection.
Yeah, they're both orange, but they're completely different.
Everyone else is more...
For me, Safira redeemed everything that I would critique with the joy of the dancing afterwards. Whereas I do think that Q struggled more with the movement.
Okay. Well, my bottom two is playing Jane and Safira. I don't think that's going to happen because they are two front runners. I think they're going to find some way of putting Morphine in the bottom, which I don't
like.
This is what I fear.
And
I don't like that at all. I'm going to stop watching.
I'm going to stop watching.
Yeah. And this will be the last podcast, if that's the case. Yeah. Mark our words. So everyone, we're logging off now. Thank you for joining us over the years. We're done.
We're done.
So
they've thrown Morphine Love Dion in the bottom with Safira.
And they gave the win to Plain Jane. I mean, make it make some sense.
Much as we love Plain, wouldn't he give another win this week? With Nymphia and Q kind of high safe, right? However, this is how the cards have fallen. So we have a lip sync between Safira and Morphine. What did you think?
I think that this is Safira's first time in the bottom.
Yep.
I think that Safira has four wins.
Yep.
And you know, it's written, all Safira needs to do is either walk out right now, pull a Jenny Lemon and just walk off, or she just needs to pull a Charlie Hyde and literally do nothing in order to lose this lip sync. She can't go home with four wins and her first bottom placement. But now, to take away all their technicalities, let's look at the performance.
Yeah.
I I think overall, I enjoyed both of their performance a lot. I like the subtle I like the subtlety of
Safira's
lip sync, because not because it kind of went with the vocals.
They were kind of laconic.
It was very like, you know, it was half-assed the way that I was saying it.
Half-assed.
And so she gave
that half-assed performer.
So Safira kind of matched it, and I really enjoyed that. I thought that was really nice. But at the same time, I enjoyed I enjoyed Morphine performing the lyrics and giving a bit more
dramatic delivery.
Yeah, they both gave beautiful deliveries.
Beautiful
performances. Sometimes they were doing things to me that didn't make sense. Like doing a round, doing a cartwheel into a split, into the Eureka.
Has it split shall forever be known?
For the chorus, where I felt like that called for a different emotion. But
I get what you mean.
Or like doing a little bit of a booty drop to a meaningful lyric. It's just like, okay, cool. It's a long song, I guess. They are running out of things to do. Great performances from both of them. If this was the first lip sync,
and there's no track record in it. Yeah,
I think my heart would have gone more towards Morphine.
By an inch. When it comes to like, I'm kind of on the same page as you. I could not, if there was no track record coming to play, I could not call this. Actually, it would be a flip of the coin.
It's very equally matched.
However, it's Morphine's fourth lip sync, Safira's first,
versus four wins,
no wins.
And we'll see it time and time. Unless she's got the cure for coronavirus, and that BBL, then sorry,
she's gonna whip it out in a second. Rue's gonna be, gonna be making a decision, and Morphine's like, I have one more thing to show you, RuPaul, and there it will be.
RuPaul, here, I can save you from the fracking. I have the contract here. If RuPaul, you save me,
I've got an environmentally conscious solution for your ranch.
If you want to stay young forever, I've got the solution, darling, right here. Out,
she is actually Isabella Rossellini's character from Death Becomes Her.
I'm curious. I need to see.
But Safira's staying.
Oh, yeah. Before the lip sync. The thing is, they couldn't put Safira up against anyone else because then there's a reason to send Safira home.
No, she'd have beaten Q.
I thought Plain Jane, but she won. So, you know, fuck my drag. And as predicted, Safira has won. And congratulations on that. It was a great win. She's a great performer. She's a great dancer. She's a expert legend drag queen. but it is sad to see Morphine go. She it really is. Did fight. She fought.
Really scrappy queen. Very, very talented. Amazing performance ability and stage presence. I'd say quite underrated all season. I'm glad that she came as far as she did because she's like super duper talented, but it still felt like she was slept on a lot of episodes.
Yeah, like this one.
Yep.
Absolutely. Like yeah. So there's two girls in the Four Winds Club.
From just this. This is going to happen more and more with long seasons.
You're right.
So next week, it does seem to be another maxi challenge, some sort of memoir book, Memoirs of a Geisha, Dreams of a Golden Child kind of thing.
I love this drink.
Let's hope they bring Jessica Wilde back for it. So are we looking at a top three then? Because it's another maxi challenge.
How many episodes are there left?
82.
Yeah. Cool. So, it's top four.
They're going to bring them all back and start again.
The top one, and then they're going to work their way backwards.
Yeah, we're going to have a first queen with like 20 wins.
Everyone, it is Easter. Please be safe. Please drink wisely. Eat as much chocolate as you're allowed
but
to.
But safely. Yeah. You know.
Eat it safely.
Be safe, guys.
Okay. Because that cocoa overdose is no joke.
It's no joke.
Next thing you know, you'll be having this highlighter under your eyes. You'll be getting the cocoa Montrese effect. Look how orange you'll look.
I ain't joking,
bitch. We don't want that. You're not a Terry's chocolate. Okay? You're important. You matter. Thank you very much, Savar, for listening, everyone. You know, follow us, engage with us on Instagram, do whatever you like, but be safe. It's Bolo.
And Dr. Tom.
See you guys next week.
Lots of love, guys. See you soon.